I just want to see the papers. He's like, I got the papers for you.
Yeah, you got the $25,000 checks written by Donald Trump, like literally in the Oval Office, to pay for him fucking a porn star. Like, this shit is crazy, son. Like, you just understand how crazy this shit is.
I like.
Send the link.
Welcome to Send the Link, where we analyze the latest feeds and reads. I'm Brandon Harrison with my co-captain, co-pilot, and co-never snitching.
Never
snitching, non-snitch, Deej Dollars.
Are there contingencies to that, or...
I'm glad you said that.
Do I just, like, put on face like, yeah, stop snitching.
Stop snitching.
Snitches get stitches.
They do.
Rats get smacked.
Rats get wrapped.
Rats get wrapped up.
Yeah.
In rugs.
Yeah.
Thrown in the East River.
Yeah.
Sleeping with the fishes.
Yeah.
Cement take the shoes. Take the cannoli.
I say this to say, listeners, there's a lot of, I don't know, not really witness protection situation going on, but a lot of revelations of crimes lately in the news, potentially. I kind of forgot about famed rapper Tekashi 6ix9ine, that whole situation.
It's ongoing.
Ongoing and apparently complicated related to who and what is going to be free for telling who or what about whom and what. Mm-hmm. A lot of talking going on. But I didn't realize that scenario would be far overshadowed by one of our biggest topics today, the God, Michael Cohen.
He's the God now.
He's the God now. He's got God status now.
Great New Yorker.
Great New Yorker.
Great New York accent, at least.
Definitely. Very, very, very Basset Hound.
Mm. He looks like a Basset Hound?
Yeah. Yeah, he's got some Basset Hound face going on.
His parents are from the Ukraine, I think that's what he said.
Yes, Ukrainian Jews.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Good for him.
We've got a lot more to talk about, too. Not just the latest and the ridiculous political show of our dystopia. This week on Send the Link, we're also going to talk about the changes at DJ's favorite content producing house, HBO. And something that's near and dear to both of our hearts that I actually want to start the show with. And DJ, you brought this up, and I'm curious about this. How the future that we live in, this modern age, created in a time of prosperity in the 90s and 80s about work and school and this millennial ethos, it's given us an era, a work career industrial era that has seeped and sapped.
Ooh, seeped and sapped.
Seeped at and sapped the life force from the entire populace. DJ, work-life balance is no more.
I think it's like one and the same for a lot of people.
One and the same. There's this article on The Atlantic. Do you have the title? I thought I had it up, but I had like six other ones.
Damn it, Brandon.
Yeah.
We practiced this 8 times before we started.
We definitely didn't. We just we just talked a lot.
Shit.
But I'm going to... So fucking tired, dog. I'm gonna just clip this shit in.
America's religion is work.
America's religion is work.
By Derek Thompson.
DJ, when you brought this out of the recent sort of evergreen archives of just articles we like to talk about when we get into sort of the more deeper philosophies or thought-provoking articles about our time and our dystopia that we live in, I was curious because I was like, yo, why so dark? Why you live like this? Huh? Like, I know, what is wrong? Well, why are you bringing this to our podcast?
Because
we usually talk about dystopian happenings,
the techno dystopia,
but not typically the inner soul of the millennial class and working class as a whole.
Well, I think this piece spoke to a real ethos and thought pattern that hadn't been verbalized by a lot of us. When I say our mid to late, well, just like the whole gamut of millennials in particular, So I know I shared it with a number of people, and I saw a couple of other people that had read it as well. And everybody was kind of just like, damn, that was some real shit. And that's how I felt. Because it's a moderately long piece that pretty much summarizes to say that the American work culture and ethic has pretty much superseded everything, to the point where all of the different facets of life, whether it's devotion, family, status, class, is all pretty much wrapped around work and the work ethos, to the point, because of a number of long-running trends that have led us in this direction, whether it's the rapacious nature of capitalism and deregulation that happened more noticeably starting in the 80s through the 90s up until now, or the massive industrialization and also relative deindustrialization when it came to making physical goods, but now into more so goods and services, a lot more white collar jobs. Also, the emergence of the student debt crisis. Number of things, I'm gonna keep going. The emergence of social media as well. And I think one thing that really stood out, made a lot of sense, is also the decline of, I'm trying to stall for time right now, but really just the decline of the place religion once had in the country as a whole.
So we're all empty inside.
And
filling our hole that was used to be filled with various religious faiths with the soul-crushing, endless hamster wheel of work.
Well, yeah, I would say, okay, so if you were to imagine society a couple of decades ago.
Okay, what year is it?
Let's say 73.
Oh, okay, so I'm wild coked out. Oh, 1973, hey, party to show.
Probably even before that, but, you know, once you get past, like, once you go back past, like, 68, it gets really shitty for black people, so, like, yeah. You know, our real, like, relatively free American history is only so long. Is within, you know,
50 years.
Yeah, it's within, like, it's within your grandmother's lifetime. So, so let's say 73, right? The communities were a bit more dense. You didn't really know about the person from next town over, or let alone across the country or across the world, i.e., social media. There weren't as many channels and all that stuff. You didn't have as much stimuli. College was still relatively cheap. There was a a pretty linear path to living a fruitful life, or just having like a straightforward job. Yeah. There were a lot of more union jobs, factory jobs back during the time. And religion was definitely wasn't the peak of, like, you know, American Christianity or whatever, but people were probably considerably more religious on the whole as of that time. So, and with the density of the community and the family and whatnot, excuse me, there was a bit more just to life than working and making your vocation really like the center of your life. So that's where emptiness comes in.
That's a good point. And this is sort of a weird anecdote, because you mentioned my grandmother, and I just hung out with her this week. And weirdly enough, it's all coming together. I was telling her about you, my coworker.
Oh, it's cute.
Co-worker, co-pod host. And I was like, yo, you know, she was saying something about traveling. And I was like, yeah, we were doing a pod, but I don't know if we would do it late one of these days, because, like, you know, my co-host, he's been like, his job moved, so he had to go to Jersey, whatever. And she was like, shit, when I was living in Newark, I used to get the train to Brooklyn all the time. I was like, Graham, that's crazy. That's way too much work. Who should have lived that life where they're getting the train from New Jersey to Brooklyn a lot? She's like, I don't know. What we should do is, me and my friends, we would just we were all teachers. We would go to different schools or whatever. I guess they would sub or like check in on things. And we would just ride the train around and be high and just get on the train. And we would go to different places and we would be high all day. And we would go to restaurants and eat and just do wild shit all the time. And I was like, this is how it was in the 70s? And she was like, I guess so. I don't know. And it just was like, I couldn't imagine doing shit like that. Like, wow, how irresponsible. I would never live a life like that.
Yeah, you get fired.
Exactly. But the way that not only, I guess, social media, but just work social media and email and Slack and all these things have just subsumed life where people want this, like, casual atmosphere, but without the freedom that would supposedly provide for you. Hmm. And now, oh, you have to be on call all the time. You're responding to all these emails, but you're not doing this at work. You have to be doing that at work. So you look this certain way on your social media, or you're climbing your career and all these different things. And people are just, people are freaking out.
Yeah. You'll obviously have a large relative minority of people that are doing well, are not expressing deep anxiety and angst within the construction of society that we have, but there are a lot of people that are relatively living a life without meaning. They go to work, come home, like we were talking about pod, they flip on an NBA game, enjoy it for what it is, taking your bit of stimuli from social media, and repeat the same thing for 5 days in a row. And that can be kind of soul-crushing if, at the same time, from a lot of those different stimuli, whether it's social media or even your own workspace and whatnot, where you're always encouraged to, really find meaning in your work. You should be doing something that you really love to do, or work hard, hustle hard,
calling,
and find your calling, so on and so forth. So if you don't really feel satisfied with that, then that brings about the massive anxiety that a lot of us feel, because when you are subjecting yourself to work, and usually for some type of product or service or to the market, then market forces can change things. So you may get into something that you felt like you really were into, but it may not even be that pertinent of an industry in the first place, which right. kind of just brings you back to the drawing board. But I will scale back and say, like, this piece was most reflective of, like, middle class to white collar type of jobs and careers.
Right.
Because there was analysis at the beginning basically saying that based on the progress that our society and economy has gone through over the past few decades, our productivity has always remained high.
American society in particular. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So out of all of the, let's say, the most economically powerful countries throughout the world, the U.S. is by far, like, we work the most. So at the same time, there's just a lot of ways to go with this shit. But anyway, there's not a lot of, like, there's not a lot of support around that, or there hasn't been a lot of support for things outside of work.
Or how this would affect people in a sense, like socially or culturally, their families, and doing things that will support them outside of work, actual programs or actionable things.
Yeah. So what happens is you just start to develop a bunch of culture within the workspace, and then leaves you confined to the workspace as well.
So bad. How do you feel about that? Because this is one of the things that it really irks me.
There's
an extent to it where it's cool, but then there's also part of it where this is all work, so it's just this weird social play. It's a continued anxiety to hang on you.
Yeah, to me, it definitely, 9 times out of 10, feels fraudulent. It feels right. forced. It just feels like a kind of put on that, you know, your company, even if it's in good faith, you know, they're having whatever the fuck, pizza night or some type of athletic event or something like that. You're like, you're only really doing this just to keep us here. Like, it's not really for our betterment. It's more so just to, like, keep the status quo, to keep us happy, but not really, like, collectively happy on an individual basis. So it was weird. So you just have that culture that pervades. And Also, one of the thematic things is Thompson, who's a millennial as well, he pretty much fesses up definitely and says, like, yo, I'm a millennial as well. Like, I feel all these things. Because it's not necessarily bad in most instances. It's really just like...
It's an, just an issue.
Yeah, it's just an issue. It just is what it is. We all, many of us have student loans. Many of us, just about all of us, use social media. So we're always comparing ourselves to one another. We're always under the impression as if we're not doing enough compared to the next person. So it just keeps everybody in the hamster wheel of just trying to push on something that you don't even really know what you're pushing at. And a lot of us are getting into the childbearing age. And what's really made clear on a policy level is that the U.S. does as close as to little as possible when it comes to
I thought Ivanka was doing something about that.
So who?
Ivanka. Ivanka?
Well, I don't know. We're still waiting on that. So... yeah, when it comes to maternity leave, paternity leave, those periods are very short. When it comes to child care subsidies, as in making child care affordable, there's very little been done on that, although a lot of Democratic candidates have pushed forward proposals to try to help with stuff like that. But what's been the case for decades now is just like, for people our age, and I've even thought about this as well, and I have friends that are starting to have kids, like, that shit is mad difficult to have at this age. To be someone like, let's say we live here in Brooklyn, right? Like, how the fuck are you really going to live in Brooklyn and have a kid? Like, at like 28. There's this, if you are somebody that's in like a career trajectory type of job where your aspirations are really just to get these titles and to get salary bumps, you know, living within these corporatocracies, like, it's just very difficult to do that.
It's where you're going to live.
Yeah, it's where you're going to live. But also, and... to a certain degree, it's not even about the money, it's the time.
Yeah.
And that's where the workism comes in, is because it's like we all just dedicate this much time to work when our productivity is not even, the ratio in terms of what we get out of it is just not
diminishing
even
really, returns.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I mean, I'm just thinking of just like abstract thoughts that I have from reading it. But I mean, anything else stand out?
Is there a white song about that? Sort of what you talked about. It's a white song from the Everybody's Working for the Weekend. You know that song, right?
Oh, I do remember that joint.
Yeah, it's just funny because, you know, this anxiety we're talking about, just everyone's perfunctory at these places, running in this hamster wheel, looking for some sort of satisfaction from it. And I guess there was this idea that back then it's like, we're just working for the weekend just to go get drunk, to be in Cheers or that sort of type of lifestyle. Right. And it's another aspect of the social stratification that I really feel about it, because I don't know what it is, but there's a point like where you transform as a person and it's painful. It's kind of similar to, I don't know, Werewolf or Dragon Ball Z or anything. All that yelling and screaming and the pain, and you just are changed. Like when you go to a big school or something like that and you had that social shift in maybe what you would have been doing before, or you get that job that puts you in a different social status where you're living in a city like this or something like that. And the anxiety of, let's say you want to get to childbearing age, or you're pushing that against where you're going to live, and you're pushing that against this career you're going to have, it gets to be, oh, maybe these people that I've been mentally thinking, I'm not supposed to be like that. I'm doing school. I'm doing these sort of things to better myself. Maybe they have way more mental peace than me doing whatever they're doing. And they don't have these anxieties. Or maybe they do because of social media. And they're looking at me thinking I have some. Like, you know, there's like this weird the stratification of why these feelings are the way they are. And they're happening through the same methods. But for which classes are the anxieties really coming from? So I think that's interesting.
I think it's coming from all directions. Like you said, like we're both looking at one another. Thompson does a good job just giving the anecdote about, you know, for those of us that work hard and then quote unquote play hard, you know, you make sure you post your photo of when you go over to whatever, Europe, south of France or something like that, just to show that, oh, you know, I'm here, like really demonstrating the social currency that you have. And,
right.
And
this is because you see where I am. This is because of how hard I work. Look at me doing this. Right. I have value. You do not.
Yeah. So it's a confluence of bad things. I think I can cut you off on something. Was there anything else?
I mean, I'm just, this is a, I think this is a great topic to think about, because I think about this shit all the time as, like, I meander through my 20s and approach 30 and have the, having the wild third life crisis. I don't even call it a quarter life crisis. And it's just funny to me because of just the social pressure, because you want to do these things, but there's so much social pressure to be a certain thing, especially if you've lived a certain way. All I know is every time I go back and think about, like, my friends that I used to have, things I used to do, I'm like, I never!
You shiver.
Like, never again! No! And would that mean living in a simpler way that doesn't have all these anxieties? Maybe. But now that, you know, you're out of the, what is it, Plato's the cave shit? Like, once you see that shit, you just can't, you can't go back. And it's a bit of a mindfuck, man. It really is. I think one other note that I think was really important, this thing is the actual tangible nature of what you're doing. For me, as someone who's creative, it feels good to make things. Because sometimes when you're just like doing, like, we're going to come up, even as a creative, it happens too. We're like, we'll come up with a plan to make this thing, and it's going to be a thing. And you just sit around and talk all this, waste all this time working, creating ideas that are just bullshit plans, and it gets this many views, and this is a KPI package, and you're just like, this is a waste of time. I'm gonna die.
I ostensibly work in tech, right? And I can't tell you how many times I've worked on projects and they just like scrap the whole fucking project, and I'm like, just why did I just spend my time doing that? It's just so, yeah, and that could happen anywhere in any workplace, but when you That tangible and creative aspect for your work is probably an added boost, because compared to a lot of the other more prevalent, just as prevalent jobs of today, whether it's, you know, coding or working on algorithms or marketing plans or things that you really can't put your hands on and really see through, it makes it even more just like what's the word? Effervescent or
just ephemeral.
Ephemeral. That's the word I was thinking. Not effervescent. So yeah, here's actually a lot of like nice, like one word, not one word, but singular sentences on here that summed up a lot, but I'm not gonna do that. But I would encourage everybody to look and read the piece, man. Anything else about this? Because we could go for a while. But
I mean, shit. Let's talk about it, man. You're good. You're good over there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this just spoke to, I think as I said before, this obviously just spoke to what a lot of us feel like, because I think we always just have a sense of wonder about, like, what is the worth of the things that we're doing? And I have, you know, community links, and I have familial connections, and I have family that lives very close to me. But we all spend the lion's share of our time working or on the commute to work or talking about work or planning for work. So it just, it obfuscates the other time you could be spending doing other things. And this is just the way to land. But once again, based on our productivity and the technology that we have, we, in order to be producing the same amount of output that we were, you know, 40 years ago, we could be doing that and have like 5-day weekends and shit. Realistically speaking, it's just that it's just that the, you know, management structures and whatnot never really changed much of any of this, or if they did, they made them very menial and not really amount to much, like unlimited vacations and shit that which are really not. Which are, I guess, in theory, kind of unlimited vacations, but there's so many caveats to that it doesn't really affect you the same way. And realistically, when you come back to work, then you're still just working 5 days a week like everybody else in the first place. So, I guess the best way, and there aren't very many like clear remedies to this, but
the commute one thing is that's a big thing to me when I think about the way that affects people. I think it's a big deal, but I interrupted
you. Yeah, it wears you down for sure. It definitely wears you down. So it's always best to live close to work or relatively close to work. So,
but just in techno dystopia, like shit like Amazon coming here. It's like, oh, all the jobs are going to continue to be here. And it's all going to collapse upon itself. And then, you know.
Yeah. But it's funny when you read most of these kind of like left of center writers or whatever, or people that talk about policy. Because it always comes back to like Scandinavia and social democracies and shit. So he points out in a lot of these Scandinavian countries, damn, I forgot which one in particular.
Let's go with Sweden, dog. Let's go with them.
Let's go with Sweden. Yeah.
Sweden. Sverige.
Yeah, land of Volvos and IKEA. Is that right? A lot of these places, they have much stronger labor laws. They have much stronger family planning policy and family policy. So you get much more time off to raise your children, more flexible work schedules. They obviously have a larger safety net and they have socialized medicine. So that's also one thing as well. Like, there's definitely an idea out there.
Oh, because, well, the medicine thing too. You can't leave a job with your health insurance.
Yeah, like, I mean, that, like, you don't even have to be a rocket scientist to understand that, right? Like, those of us that have, you know, non-working class jobs, like, you know, shout out to the janitors out there, but like, we're not trying to be janitors, right? So if you have like an office type of job, you're going to have some type of legitimate healthcare plan. So it's just hard to be in between jobs when you had a healthcare plan. And if you have some type of longstanding disease or handicap or something like that, like, those people are pretty much stuck to the jobs that they have. And since you're so stuck to that job, you can't even, it's hard to even investigate and try to get another job while you're at it. Like, that's just difficult for everybody everywhere. Like, I know people are in the middle of trying to interview at other places, but that's difficult when you're supposed to be at work 5 days a week anywhere.
You do the weird social lie. I'm going to doctor.
Yeah, like, I'm sick.
It's like, why is that a thing? That's one of my biggest issues I've been sick about for 3 days in a row. Work culture and shit. It's just like, you can't leave.
Like, that's the point.
Yeah. It's just a weird thing. Like, you're trapped to a point where you're encouraged to come up with this absurd lies to maintain this social thing that you want better. It's just so, I don't know, man. I don't know what we're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think it all comes back down to the fact that we have turned the dial so strongly towards like just unfettered capitalism in so many senses that it's really having detrimental effects just across the board. Because all of this is really just to like get the most productivity, make the most money, and build the most wealth for everyone involved. But it's like, okay, well, at what cost? What is it really doing to people? Do people really get meaning out of their lives? And especially with the erosion of widespread religiosity, what is it really holding together families and communities?
Yeah, and for what?
Yeah, it's always a for what. Like, this is really, the for what is, what would you say the for what is? I can tell you what I think it would be. Like, what is it all for?
What's keeping society together?
No. Like, what is it all for? Like, for an individual? What is the work for? What is it all for?
The self-ego?
Okay, that's one. Okay. I would say that's probably the real one.
And I think family is extension of that.
I would say for your children, right? But if you're working so fucking much, you're not even, a lot of people don't even see their kids grow up. Like, that's always some shit you see in,
I hate you, Dad.
Yeah, you know, all these things.
What does it work? I just wanted you to go to the game.
Yeah,
Daddy, I was working for you, little Billy. Get that bike. I didn't want the bike.
Daddy
wasn't
there to change my underwear. You know, so.
Awesome powers.
It's tough, man. Try to find a balance out there. That's what I'm saying.
To wrap this up, what's your escape plan? Mine is going to a sort of small Caribbean nation, not that expensive.
Damn, why you bite my idea?
And just buying the citizenship and just being like, boom, I'm good. I'm going to catch fly fish all day and just chill.
Right. I had a weird conversation today, actually, in connection to this somewhat. Just to what you said, not to the piece. But I said next to a Serbian guy. He's from Serbia.
Mm.
Lives in like one of those Eastern European Brooklyn neighborhoods, okay. Like Bay Ridge or Kensington or whatever. And how do we even start? Oh, I was eating a roti. I brought a roti from the crib. And he was like, "Oh, where'd you get it from? We should start conversing." And he basically starts telling me all about Trinidad and Tobago. I'm like, and he asked me, "Oh, is my family West Indian or whatever?" It's like, "Yeah, they Trini." And he's telling me, like, yeah, I've been there. multiple times. I went there for Carnival. I was like, what? You went to Trinidad for Carnival? And he's like, he's this older, probably in his 40s. I've seen his daughter. Like, he's cool. He's fine or whatever. But like, somebody I would never imagine going to fucking Trinidad Carnival, he like the Carnival of all Carnivals.
He has his own life and shit.
Apparently, son. And he said he went to... So he's been throughout Trinidad and has gone to some of the more remote areas.
Yeah.
And jungle also has shit. yeah, literally. And he said he had visited Tobago as well and did kind of a similar thing. He said, yeah, there's like a part of northeastern Tobago where it's like nothing out there. It's just people like chilling, Rastafarians or whatever, living in the jungle in the forest or whatever the fuck. And they just out there, like, and I was saying, yeah, like, you could really go out there and the world will pass you by. I've been in Tobago as well, and I think you've been there too, yeah, right? To the nylon pools, right? Yeah. Oh, shout out to
that. It's just fire. Yeah, it's just like, listeners.
Stand up in water.
go fuck with it. Yeah.
So
send the link approved.
Yeah, so yeah, shout out to the travel guy. That was, and, yeah, it said you could just go out there and the world will pass you by. You will enjoy yourself. It's a lot of, I mean... It's just beautiful out there, and you don't really have to worry about much. And I got that vibe immediately as we were just driving around Tobago when I was visiting. I'm like, these people are fine, dog. Like,
and nothing going on. And I don't think you would lose that desire for work because that, like, someone who's creative, like, yo, if I was out there catching fish, I'd be like, yeah, I caught 2 fish today.
Ooh,
that's lit. Fine.
Right, and it's just a different way of living. Like, the U.S. and none of these super... capitalized or industrious countries, nobody has found a way to cheat death, right? So you still have to find value in your life in some way. And that's not necessarily working. And I think that's what we're all seeking.
Well, to put a button on this and give you the fire segue, did Mr. Plepler find value from his work?
Mr. Plepler, Mr. Richard.
Yes.
Dick? Maybe Dick?
Dick Plep.
Dip. Dick Plepler has been the CEO of HBO for the past 27 years?
27 years.
That's my whole lifetime, low key.
He created my life. He created.
He did, and that's classic. They still do that. He's been the CEO of HBO for 27 years and has already stepped down or just has abruptly stepped down from his position.
Yes.
8 months after the merger of AT&T and Time Warner.
Mm-hmm.
After it became clear that his superiors wanted HBO to go in more of a Netflix direction, from my understanding.
Pumping out more content.
Did you have something that spoke to that?
Well, there was a piece about his whole tenure and sort of the changes that are happening about... Yeah. At an HBO premiere party, the CEO seat was empty.
Who is it from?
The New York Times. Ah, yes, John Coblin and Edmund Lee. This is more of an interview piece that they're asking about, like, his absence and what do people think about it and what are the changes that are going to be happening. But since the 1996 Telecommunications Act and this growth of giant mergers and the idea of not only content companies, but telecommunications companies and conglomerates buying content companies coming to happen. It's been happening for a long time before HBO was part of it. And HBO being sort of the premium arm of this, I guess, Turner conglomerate that's been purchased by AT&T was able to avoid what's been happening for a lot of these other brands like NBC Comcast or this whole Viacom empire thing that's going on between CBS and these other brands. So now AT&T has purchased them. Mr. Plepler is in an awkward position to have to maybe do this, I don't know, not a gamification, but this just breakdown of what the identity of something he's built up for 27 years is.
To spread the breadth of the content, but likely causing a decrease in quality, I would imagine. Unless there was additional commentary that they would have more revenue to work
well, with. Just to give a note, as I was sort of getting this article up, AT&T's top priority is tackling its debt load of $171 billion. So they actually had to borrow the money to get Time Warner. So they're trying to make as much money as possible. They're not really worried about what any loss leaders that are sexy like HBO.
Well, has HBO been a loss leader? Well, just Game of Thrones?
That's a good question. I think the idea of its a primary brand, one of the best brands that they have, to be boutique. Not necessarily that it's a loss leader, that it's not making money.
I can understand that.
Okay. The idea that it's just going to be a boutique thing that makes cute stuff.
Yeah. That's better said.
Yeah. I don't know if that's good going forward for them financially.
Yeah. This is when business eats art, right?
I mean, it happens all the time.
Yeah, man. I mean, I brought this to you because I was obviously a bit hurt by my man, Dick Plepp, stepping down. I never knew who the fuck he was, but I've been familiar with,
you know. But he
working in the background.
That's a great thing about art and life. You don't know who's influencing you.
Ah, yes. Yeah. So I didn't know who he was, but I've obviously been familiar with HBO for quite some time. Known to be the first. What were they, like the first? They weren't the first cable channel, but they were the first pay, premium.
First, like, paid. Legit pay channels for just one channel. Yeah.
And practically since its inception, they've always had very good content up till now. I've taken adapted stories and screenplays and documentaries, TV shows, web series, like how they adapted what you call it, High Maintenance, all across the board, to where HBO is just known for a specific amount of prestige. I think that's the best way you would call it, like prestige TV. That's been their brand, and that's what they've sat on. They've actually sat out a lot of the kind of like sullied fights between other studios,
right?
For all those different IP, they usually like to focus on their products, give it a run for a couple of seasons, have massive operating budgets that you might be aware of. Did you ever know that to be true? It always seems like their content like looks good as film.
Who is a high budget? HBO.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they also produce less content.
Right.
And just to give you another financial note, $2 billion in profit.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so they're doing all right.
It's not Amazon. Well, Amazon barely makes profit.
That is lost later.
Yeah,
Apple, are they still making shit? Is that
It doesn't matter. They make money.
That whole Apple TV shit confuses me. I don't understand it.
Nah, I'm not even talking about the television. I was just talking about like as a company, if they're making profit. So still have done made a profit. Maybe not going gangbusters for a company of that size in terms of the profit margin, but this shit was working. Everybody fucks with HBO. But this is what happens when, you know, these mergers happen and people step in and say, okay, well, we need you to go in a more Netflix direction. What is Netflix? Their main calling card now, like their main strategy is just to produce like literally just fucking everything.
Right.
And the sacrifice of that is the quality of the content or the execution of that. They probably had a number of shows that were probably good ideas that just weren't executed well and vice versa. But Their success rate is what would you call it?
Man, at Netflix? 40s?
Yeah, in the 40th percentile range.
I couldn't even 20s? Tell you. It's probably pretty low.
It's pretty low. It's definitely less than 50% in terms of having very good.
They try to strong arm you too. They're like, listen, this shit got 3 seasons. Just watch it. I'm gonna keep going. 4.
Friends from college. I mean, that show might be lit, but it's just so much shit on there that you don't know. What was the show that we were talking about that won an Emmy with the old white guys? The fucking some effect shit?
I know.
Just a lot of shows.
Jabroni effect. I don't fucking know.
Right. So now they're going in that direction. And I'm not sure the marketplace wants that or needs it.
Well, can I give you the corporate perspective that has been going on for the past 3-4 years, too?
Mm-hmm.
That you obviously know about, but listeners. AT&T and their angle, what they feel like they need to do is this whole arms race before these Netflix things, these contracts they have fall apart.
Oh, before they break apart. Okay.
So I think a lot of that, I don't know when the Disney one is. It's the end of this year, I think 2020, as Disney's preparing to do their own service.
Mm-hmm.
So initially, Disney buying the Fox properties and getting some of those other Marvel shows that were out there, Fantastic Four and X-Men and a lot of the big things that people wanted. That was actually a bidding war between Comcast and Disney.
Uh-huh.
We forgot about that. That was a whole thing. And Disney was like, yo, they went deep in the bag to get it. They got it. So now Comcast is like, we're starting a streaming service. Disney, we lost to this. AT&T is like, what are we going to do? And they swoop in and get this Turner Media deal and pick up these properties. And they're like, hey.
Is it Turner or Time Warner?
Time Warner. But Time Warner, Turner is part. Like it's
okay, I got you.
Yeah.
I
was yeah. It's all a big fucking web now.
Yeah.
But as they're approaching this point where Netflix could be vulnerable because they've been pushing out all this shit to make up for what's going to happen right, at the end of the year. They're like, hey, we want to be there when and make our HBO an actual legitimate contender by pumping out a whole bunch of shit. Because the time that I did have HBO when I was using somebody's or free pass or some shit like that, I was like, huh, it's like four shows on here.
I mean, look, they've produced more shows nowadays. I get what you're saying. Though.
I'm always like, all right, I like that. You know, still don't watch Young Pope. Still want to. It's just so SEO to me, man. I'm just like, oh, look at this nigga. He got glasses on. Pope. Yeah. But it's just like, it felt very like, this is it. So if they're going to change that, they got to ramp it up now. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know. Young Plep.
Yeah, Plep wasn't fucking with it.
He wasn't in play for that.
He saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah, man.
He didn't want his masterpiece to.
It was crazy. Like, they got rid of HBO Boxing.
Boxing?
Yeah, HBO Boxing.
Okay.
Which has been the staple. How long was Mike Tyson knocking people out of that shit? It fits a long time since the beginning of HBO.
I mean, I thought that shit went to, like, Showtime a long time ago. But
it was just, like, one of the institutions of the thing. They were just like, yo, shit is changing around here. It.
Yeah, and I'm not against change, but this is more than change, right? This seems like
it's more than change.
Yeah, it just seems like a clear money ploy, and for something that is as revered as HBO, it just leaves a cause for concern. I just leave it at that. Like we're not going to see a massive fucking quality dip anytime soon. I would doubt, but the formula has worked very well, you know, for 27 years. So to see that them trying to tinker with it. It just leaves cause for concern because it's not like it was just narrow or they were showing the same type of stories or the same formats. Like that shit was all across the board.
I think they just wanted to make it bigger and to scale it more. Mm-hmm. But I guess before we move on, one thing I really thought about as we talked about this whole situation is that damn, that first article really fits to what we're talking about. The C-suite of all these fucking corporations and what they're doing with it, and it really hurt me that and how it like affects your own personal like entertainment. I'm just like, damn.
I don't know. Can you code that in a little bit for me?
I feel like that whole capitalist grip on all of us is like, yeah. Well, what their strategy and why the fuck?
Okay, so it's like okay, so And offhandedly said, okay, so you know the art house that you really liked, right?
Yeah.
That's so like HBO's okay, so now we're just gonna put it in a fucking mansion with like a bit like 25% more art. Will you like it as much? Maybe, maybe not. But like why? Yeah. Oh, because we wanted to, you know, make a couple more dollars. It's like, okay, I guess. If you insist. Just don't fuck it up. That's what I leave it to. Oh man. It's all right, man, suck it up.
All right, I'm just trying
to... You gotta go to work Monday.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Until you move to Tobago.
I think it's like 100,000.
What do you mean? Like to live out there?
Yeah, I already looked up like legacy, and my family fucked me up on that one. I was trying to be like some kind of back-end way where I can do shit. But I'm trying to have two passports, man. With this America shit is about to fall apart.
When the race war starts,
when this fucking shit gets bubbling up, I'm trying to dip up out of here. So before we end, what do you think about snitch number one? Okay, Michael Cole. We teased it.
Yeah, we did. Primarily because everybody that is like, what do you call people that like just follow the news? Is that it? Like people that just pay attention?
Newsies. They wear hats.
If you pay attention, you've known that Michael Cohen's fixer, I mean, not Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's fixer was speaking in front of the House Oversight Committee.
Giving up all the goods.
Just letting it all out. Yo, have you seen Ray Donovan?
No, I've heard of it.
Okay, it's not very good, but nonetheless.
Leave Schreiber.
Yeah.
Leave.
Yes. Not Wolverine. Sabretooth at one point. He was a fixer, so when I think of Michael Cohen using the term, I think of like Ray Donovan, and it's just weird. Nonetheless, I thought it was compelling. I did. I had my little New York Times app running with the additional commentary for a good chunk of it. That also caused me to like lose almost an entire day of work.
Same.
Me just like wiggling my mouse in front of the computer, looking at like, yeah. What'd you say? Like at one point, I got, you know, I'm a Eastern East Coast cultural. I'm an East Coast elite.
Yes.
So I have a pair of AirPods.
Mm.
So one of my coworkers came over and started talking to me and shit. And if you have a video playing like that, at least on that app, if you take your AirPods out, it'll just come through the speaker. So I was like, oh shit, nah, I can't do that. So I just like had like a serious conversation for like 10 minutes with just one AirPod in, because I didn't want it to be awkward because I was standing away from my phone. So that just shows you how engaged I was, because I was still just trying to like hear little anecdotes from the most just... like the best, I don't know, like the best drama we've ever had.
It was great.
I mean, this is an ongoing thing, man. This is like a media obsession,
season,
son.
The season of America has been kind of fired, not gonna lie.
Oh, man. This one thing that Trump gave us, man. He gave us just all of this.
Great show, man.
Great fucking show, son. I would have rather not have to watch it, but I'm like, damn, I can't believe these people are just this fucking stupid and crooked at the same time. Nonetheless, he really said everything that everybody already kind of knew. He actually didn't disclose too much new information.
I love the fact that just the receipts of it. Because all this shit, everyone knows this motherfucker's crooked. Everyone, like, we all know, like, this shit.
It's laundering money.
just flagrantly laundering money, doing shit like, and devaluing his company, he's doing insurance fraud, all this shit. And it's like, okay. I just want to see the papers. He's like, I got them. I got the papers for you.
Yeah, he got the $25,000 checks written by Donald Trump, like literally in the Oval Office, to pay for him fucking a porn star. Like, this shit is crazy, son. Like, you just understand how crazy this shit is.
I like every day going forward, I just think, wow, white people. Like, how, yo? How? Like, how much did you hate Obama that you're willing, like, this shit is
how much did you hate Hillary Clinton?
Whatever.
I know, just
whatever.
What brought you to this point?
What would make you, and like, no, they can never say anything ever again.
Yeah, it looks pretty
bad. There's no valid validity to this whatsoever.
Yeah, this is because politics is broken, which means the federal government is broken. We're pretty much just like flailing along. You know, things are barely working. The government was barely working. They just fucking opened shit up a couple weeks ago. Because what you have now are literally, in a weird way, the Republicans like helping obstruct justice, if you think about it.
No, honestly, we always joke about them. And this idea that they don't know how to lead because they're generally obstructionists and they just want to preserve things, and except cutting taxes or whatever. And I watched a YouTube video today about The Matrix, and you know, at the end, after Smith is like copied everybody and shit, he just explodes because I think they did it. They deregulated everything.
Yeah,
they fucking got a complete maniac that like subsumes all of the bullshit into like one figure.
Got the millennials all. Everybody got anxiety and shit. Like, working too much.
Now. Like, we're all fucking worked out. Everyone's a corporatist. They won, and now the shit is just like does not compute. It's just exploding. Like, it's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, the Democrats, to varying degrees of effectiveness, asked a bunch of questions, and I think literally all but one Republican pretty much just berated him up there and said, oh, you're a liar, so we don't or can't believe anything that you say, even though he came and we all know about a bunch of other corroborating evidence for a lot of Cohen's claims. And he was, up until like the summer of 2018, last year, Michael Cohen was the deputy finance chair of the Republican Party. Like, nobody like wants to bring up shit like that, or at least they don't. And also, if he's like, let's say he's a bad person, they're calling him a liar.
Right.
He was Donald Trump's lawyer for 10, his personal lawyers for 10 years. Like, does that not reflect poorly on Donald Trump as well? Like, is he just like this little lamb?
It's
dope. It looks bad on everybody.
The poor level of, you know, they have to, I guess, in their minds. But
they don't believe
it. In my head, like, if I was a Republican, I'm like, this is my perfect moment to become president. Well, I would just disagree with everyone, and I'd immediately become the most popular fucking Republican.
You would be fucking, there's a good chance you would get primary.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what district you're in. Like, there are a lot of constraints to this, so I understand some of the political science to it. I'm not saying what you're saying is incorrect necessarily, but it's just fucking crazy. And we need, as a country, to break some of the constraints on the country, the anachronisms, the things that should be, the reforms that need to be made.
Right.
So shit actually works properly. And so there are not just clear incentives to be completely obstinate, or if you're an entire political party, you are just dedicated to not finding the truth out about your potentially criminal president. Like, think about, you know, the easiest way to laugh is to, like, think about what the Republicans would do if this was Hillary Clinton or somebody like that. Like, they
still talk about her shit in the hair. Like,
yeah, they still got to bring her up. But even, I don't know, think about, I guess, somebody without as much name value, just ex-Democrat or whatever. Like, there would be people rioting in the streets right now because they have more white people, so they have just more, like, structural clout.
What's hilarious to me is because they finally asked Trump about it because he was too busy chilling with Kim Jong Un afterwards.
Getting curved and shit. Like, I ain't fucking with whatever plan you got, my nigga.
They're like, fuck that, sanctions. They're like, so what'd you do here? The hearing? He's like, well, you know, he's a liar, but he did say a true thing, you know, about no collusion, but he's also a liar. Just like, yeah, like, nigga,
they all, yeah.
Just be like, I don't fuck with him. Like, yeah. Like, how are you to try to gain his, you know, gravitas, all the shit that he had on this, while simultaneously him being a liar. It's just like,
yeah, they were just cherry picking anything that they would say to support their point of view and refute everything else. So that's,
it's just
where it stands.
I just can't they just be the opposition instead of being like this fucking craven? Yeah, like
that's the thing too. That's probably one thing.
Even
that's,
the racist thing. Like, why is it like, no, you like. No, just disagree with me. Okay. Don't like make me you. You're you.
I wanted to mention that, but hold on. It would be a reasonable tactic to just like not say anything.
Yeah.
But I guess when you just have such a large number of people, obviously there are a couple hundred people in the federal legislature. Like, for them to just not say anything to the effect of whatever's just going
chill
on.
Out.
Just don't say anything. A lot of Republicans do that. Like, they don't fuck with him, but they obviously, you know, support the entire right-wing agenda or whatever, what have you. And they just don't say anything. But, like, people really be coming out here, like, trying to, like, gas him up. He's just clearly a terrible president and an incompetent president. So, but why even, you know, like, compromise yourself in that type of way more than you're already compromised by having this person as the leader of the party and the leader of the country? Obviously, it's just a bad position to be put in. But if I were a Republican, I would be one of those ones that just literally just doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
Instead of being, like you said, your guy, Mark Meadows comes up there and brings up a prop black woman, like, to be like.
No, it's hilarious, though, because she's a terrible person. You know, a couple weeks ago, she stayed in NYCHA up here to, like, show that. I saw this on the news.
What, to show how good or bad
she was just like, I'm going to come stay in NYCHA to, you know, see.
Okay, let's
brought to this hearing on the news recently. She decided to come up here and to stay with a couple families on a couple days on the weekend to see how these broke motherfuckers live.
That's just probably like a press conference, like, to see how these broke niggas live.
And for like, I didn't know, I wasn't watching the part because she's a black woman, she works for Trump, and I looked up and I was like, her. It killed me. It's just these craven motherfuckers are just in cahoots. And the absurdity, like, for him to just not say anything and be like, I'm not a racist, fine. The absurdity to bring it up yourself. No one did this shit. For him to be like, all right.
Defend Trump's racism bona fides.
Why are you going to defend Trump's race? Let him be racist. It benefits you, honestly, as wherever you're fucking from, Georgia or some shit.
He's from a gerrymandered North Carolina.
The one of these joints that goes up like...
Yeah.
Squiggly ass
district. That's one of those things we got to fix, yeah. He's from a gerrymandered North Carolina district. Yeah.
It would behoove him to not acknowledge that at all.
Yeah, just don't, like...
But...
Nobody else was saying shit about that.
But he's like, I'm going to say that y'all are racist somehow because Trump has a black friend. The funniest take on this shit that killed me on Twitter was, they're like, you know, that's how slavery worked. Black people working for white people. Like,
okay, he worked.
The idea that, like, because this black woman worked for him, that he's not racist. And it's like, that's the whole premise of slavery, is like black people working for fucking white people.
Yo, that shit was wild, son. And that shit, like, was she not embarrassed? If you look at her in the face, you could tell. I don't know. She got
shame
a little,
inside.
She got a little twinkle in her eye or something.
She was looking at her bank account. She was like, man, it's fine.
That's bad. Like, yeah, all the black people around them are definitely like the shittiest of them, too, man.
They're just shitty.
Shout out to Tim Scott, man.
My black person.
Tim Scott. Nah, Tim Scott is trying now.
Fuck Tim Scott.
I mean, Brandon's on the fuck him. I'm saying, like, he is who he is.
I'm trying to give him credit.
I don't know. I mean, I was trying to formulate some type of credit to give this nigga, but I guess it's not much.
He's being quiet enough.
Yeah, he just shuts the fuck up. That's what I'm saying.
He's also a senator, so he's like, I'm good for 6 years.
Yeah, so, you know, if you on that team, just shut up. Just don't bring in your black friend
to show you're not racist. Like, just make it about, we rich, we trying to stay rich. Don't. These absurd culture politics are just like, why would you hitch your wagon to this? And it just makes me upset. We talk about the work culture thing. Just the feeling of that every day this racist shit is getting worse. Like, how? It's 2019. Still? And the fact that every single speaker, if you just... All these white people are getting up. So, we're going to defend the motherfucking criminal president, and they get up one after another and just defend this motherfucker and all these absurdities and check for all this shit and pressing Obama for having mustard and yelling out in the fucking State of the Union and all this crazy shit that they would do.
It's bad.
And white after white person.
These represent the people of the United States, so it says more about the country than it says about these guys in a lot of ways.
Jump me in Tobago, man.
You might have to go to Tobago, man, because at least when you get there, nobody make you their prop because they're just all black and it's not the same dynamics. Jeez, man. People, there's been plenty of commentary about that, man. Just like the accusation of calling someone racist is just actually worse than structural racism.
How painful is it to wipe? And the funny thing is that what he did was... When I talk about Trump being the definition of racism, like, this was racist. It just happened. Like, that was racism.
Yeah.
You, as a member of the federal fucking government, just brought out a black person. Like,
that look, he's not racist. Like, look at her.
Like, that is racism. Literally.
Okay, so let's bring it to end with this. Okay,
sorry.
So he does this ridiculous thing. It kind of just awkwardly derails the vibe of...
And Michael Cohen is like, oh shit, he's like watching it.
And Michael Cohen is he's not good in this arena as well. He obviously was attached to the hip of Trump. He's, for all of his soothsaying and showing humility, he's
slimeball.
Still, fuck him, but at least he's apparently trying to get on a straight and narrow. He's going to do his 3 years. It is what it is. They derailed the thing. And, okay, so then the most junior Congress people go up. So there were a lot of the kind of superstar Democratic freshman women.
Presley, Cortez, and...
Tlaib. Yeah. Rashida Tlaib is basically like... She's like, how could you bring this prop up here, sir? She's like, now that was racist or whatever. And then they have this... massive back and forth. I was just mad fucking like awkward. I'm sitting there and my dad's like trying not to laugh.
So I laughed out loud.
I was like, oh fuck. I thought like Maybe Congress is getting triller. It takes time.
Hey, last Trump was like, oh shit. He did like.
Maybe Congress is getting triller over time. It's going to get to a point where she's going to say some shit like that. And they have decorum rules. That's also like, you can't make ad hominem attacks against someone. But it's going to get to a point where like, yo, y'all niggas are racist over there. It's
gonna be and like, they can be like, we're like, I said it.
Yeah, it's just going to be, is what it is. I don't know. Maybe fucking Yana Presley, whatever, is going to get taken off the committee. But it'll be a moment to really like call some of this shit out. So Mark Meadows gets in his feelings and looks like he's about to cry. And he says, you know, I have...
You know my history.
This nigga says, I have nieces and nephews of color. First of all, who the fuck, like...
I'll have to Google them,
do
too.
Do niggas care about your nieces and nephews half the time? But like, it when it comes like, to who your profile is?
It's like...
nieces and nephews. Nonetheless.
I got little niggas at home.
He didn't even say black, first off. He was like...
They're half Asian.
Like, what the fuck? Like, nobody knows what you mean by that. Because he's just, like, completely flabbergasted and caught off guard because, gasp, you were called racist or something that you were done. You did was called racist. You know what? When it comes to racism, black people just need to be given the ultimate deference. When it comes to any of these racial issues, I see and hear far too many interviews and podcasts and stuff like that where they really don't just have a trilled black person. They're just like, nigga, that shit was racist. So like, what are we talking about? And then nobody just takes their opinion to heart and say, you know what?
Everyone's scared of, like, being called racist hurts that much that they're like, we don't want to go too far because that might happen to me, so let's just, like...
Yeah, they were about to strike that from the record and everything because it was being construed as an ad hominem attack. So, it was bittersweet as it happened. Basically, Tlaib had to kind of rephrase it or make it clear that she wasn't calling him a racist, but what he did, she thought it was racist.
And it was.
And... cooler heads prevailed. Elijah Cummings, who's the what would you call that? The chair of the committee.
Face, that shit happened, he was just like rolled his eyes like, oh shit.
He's a black man.
And he's washed. He's so washed.
Washed in what way?
In terms of like, I think he had surgery or something recently. Like, he's just like,
he's older.
Not even that he's older, but he's just like, he's tired.
He looks tired. He looks like he's been in Congress for a long time, which he has been. And this guy... Well, he mediates the whole situation, and then he basically has to green book the situation, as in speak to everyone's better angels. You know, Mark, nobody will believe it, but we're best friends. We commute to work together. Our kids eat together. But like,
and you're racist, but it's cool.
Yeah, like, it's one white friend. I'm his one black friend. You know, like, some shit like that. And he alleviates the situation, but does it in the fashion that... calms Mark Meadows that makes him feel better. It makes him feel like he's not a racist.
And we're tired of it.
And I mean, I get it in the moment, but it's gonna get to a point in which with so many things that are just like facially racist and can be construed as such, or if there should be an argument about that matter, that they're just gonna have to have that shit in these type of places because you can't bring up a fucking black, like, prop person to show that Trump is not a fucking racist. Like, that's not really, that's a small sliver of what fucking racism is, dog. Like, this Trump was, the first time he was referenced, Donald Trump was referenced in the New York Times, was, like, in the 70s, because his building that he was running with his dad was segregating, like, when they were taking applications, they would write B's on the corner of the application to identify black people and didn't approve them. That is legit, was like a thing.
That's so, racism.
Yeah, that's like actual racism, actionable racism. So don't sit up here and bring up your black friend like, oh yeah, he golfed with Spike Lee, so that nigga's not racist. Like, no, bro. Like, that's not how shit gonna rock. And he looked foolish for doing that. And maybe he just isn't like just like your normal naive white person. But this is why this is why y'all gotta speak to more black people or have black people on these platforms, and they're getting there. And be like, yo. White people, don't do shit like that, please. That is mad.
Don't moonwalk.
Don't moonwalk. Don't wear fucking black paint. Don't say you don't have a racist bone in your body.
Because you do.
Because Mark Meadows...
Mine's in my solar plexus.
Mark Meadows is also the same guy who was campaigning, talking about sending Obama back to...
Kenya and shit.
Back to Kenya or whatever. And you know what? Politics is a lot of pros and, you know, just bullshit and capping in front of people. But you know what? the people in that crowd, they didn't know if, whether you're racist or not, and that shit got a rile out of them and out of their racist bone, whatever, by their femur, whatever, in their body. So you could say you're not all you want, but it really comes down to your actions. You didn't have to say that in front of that crowd when you were campaigning. So you tell me.
I would say, to wrap this whole thing up, I like how Michael Cohen responded to this, that whole idea, when they're like, so whatever, Lynn Patton is here and she worked for Trump, so he's not racist. And he goes, you know, why would you work for him so long if he's racist? He goes, well, you know, I would understand how you could do that as a son of a Holocaust survivor, to work for somebody that is racist, that I shouldn't have done it, but you do it because you like money and you're craving.
Yeah.
Like the whole idea that like you don't work for people you don't like or just like is absurd. And I like that he pointed that out, that he was calling Trump, the fact that he called Trump a racist, which he didn't have to do. Like, that wasn't part of his testimony. We already.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of just trying to give him a full takedown. So,
but he, you know, he's like, it is for what it is. But you know, it's a good anecdote.
Yeah,
it's a good little. He can have that R on him, his resume, along with the crimes and shit.
Yeah. So we let that derail the basically the majority of the Cohen conversation just as much as it derailed the fucking the
appropriately so
the committee hearing when it happened. But basically, this helps the result of the information that he divulged in the committee hearing will help bring about so many more committee meetings and investigations, congressional, state, and federal. So we're still kind of just in the midst, somewhere near the beginning of the slow. It's not just the normal decline, but like the political and financial or business decline of Trump or whatever he has.
It's all falling apart.
I've been told you this though. I've been like, this shit is not going to happen tomorrow. He still has a lot of power and has a lot of, apparently has 40% of the country of their votes behind him still. But I told you, he's just not going to come out of this shit clean. Like in like 3, 4, 5 years, that company, like shit is just going to be
done.
It's going to be washed. Because he's garnered so much attention, rightfully so, on him and his business practices and his type of clientele, to where there's obviously fraudulent and illegal activity
that's happening. Speaking of fraud, that was one of the funniest. This his anecdotes about little things, and he was saying that he about paying contractors. He said some shit like, you know, why would I do that? That's stupid. Or something. Just like. About the blacks, about how they're riding through Chicago, all these little things that you know are just true. Like, why lie about that? You got the papers, you got the documents.
I don't know. I mean, but I could intuit most of that anyway. So yeah, I don't doubt that either. But this would be the first president since I guess what, Nixon, that it just comes out of the old shit just washed. Like even if he doesn't get impeached or whatever, immediately when he's done, like he and his company are just gonna be under so many different investigations. It's just not going to look good. And he's going to basically have to transport his operation to like fucking Azerbaijan or whatever the fuck and just have these towers
fucking
and
sheiks and shit paying for him.
In these authoritarian countries, because those are the only people that still fuck with him. He'll have a tower in North Korea in a minute.
Yeah, right? Like, yo, I'm here. Fuck
with me. That's going to be what it is.
Dennis Rodman, one man show at the Trump. Trump Pyongyang.
Right. So it's a mess. This is the biggest mess of all time.
On that note, it's been a great send the link, DJ. Glad we made this happen before the week was out.
Yeah.
Everybody keep listening. Don't work too hard. Keep your eyes open to the terrible state of our government and working dystopia. And stay positive. Smile.
Find meaning.
Find meaning.
Not just in your work.
I like it. Very wise.
Shit, I gotta do that. I gotta figure some shit out.
I get you, man. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud. And yeah, all right, bye.